Hello, everyone. This is the American Israelite newspaper podcast, the Let There Be Light podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch, and I'm here with my co-host,
Julie Babs Bernson Brook.
that it keeps getting longer every
Yehuda
week.
Yehuda Basha.
Yehuda
Julie
Basha.
Julie Babs Bernson Brook.
Yehuda Basha, you know. And then we're here, we're joined with our special guest today,
Gail Levine Schindler, Zahava Arna, Bat David HaKohen.
Now, can you hear, is your mic up? I want to make sure your
Kohen,
mic's on.
I heard the Kohen in there.
Yeah, my father was a Kohen. Even though my maiden name is Levine, it's a very long story.
My mother was a Kohen, too. In fact, on their, the headstone of the family, Katz family headstone. Is the symbol, you know.
Right, mm-hmm.
with the Spock symbol.
Well, it's right. That's what, well, they still do that.
Right.
Leonard Nimoy
used it.
When the priests go up, in fact, they'll do it Passover when they bless the congregation.
Not on Shabbat.
Well, it's on Sunday too.
On Sunday
they'll do it Sunday.
So what we're talking about is the symbol where you put your fingers and you spread them apart and then you make a triangle.
Right, and they come out when they go up on the bima. Is it the second day? First day.
It would be both days. Well,
okay.
One day in Israel,
but you
don't do it on Shabbat. It's the blessing of the Kohanim.
Right, and they bless the congregation. So we will get blessed next week. I love it when I get blessed because
You feel all blessed.
I feel all blessed, yeah.
They turn their back to the congregation.
They pull
their talit over their head.
Right.
And they hold their talit up.
Yes.
With their hands in that formation.
Yes.
And then they turn around.
I've never seen it because I always put my tallit over my head to the point I cannot see anything of what's going on. I've never seen it in my entire life.
I peeked.
Yeah. Some people will peek once in a while. I've never done that. So anyway, we are here today. It is, today is Wednesday, March 23rd. 23rd, right?
Well, today is the 24th,
sorry,
but tomorrow is the 25th.
Paper comes out tomorrow, the 25th.
And I want to give a mazel tov to my mother and father, Skooky and Sandy Bernson in Chicago, because yesterday was like the 63rd wedding anniversary for them.
Oh.
So that's pretty nice.
And you're how old, 64?
Yeah, that's an old joke. Barry uses the same one on our kids, too, yeah. No, I am 61.
Oh, okay.
And they were married in 1957, so that must be 64.
Well, I was born in 58, March 7th, 1958,
and you're
63.
So they were married for 64 years. So mazel tov to my parents.
All right. So,
and today is the 11th of Nisan, and tomorrow is the 12th of Nisan, and Saturday evening is Passover, and
this is the
Passover issue, and we are so excited to have Gail here, who's the food writer at The Israelite, who comes with an extensive resume. I mean, she is multifaceted. She's like a Renaissance woman. When I read all about everything she's ever done, it's amazing.
You're embarrassing her.
Well,
keep it coming.
Keep it coming.
I read the Kugel Chronicles, I was just amazed. I kept going deeper and deeper into it. In fact, I took some of the recipes off. I gave one to my daughter because we like to use stock, you know, vegetable stock.
Right.
I said, we could be making our own vegetable stock.
Huh.
So I took that off. I sent her a copy and me a copy. I'm all in. And actually, I signed up for your weekly newsletter that you send out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I am, last week was Passover week, so it was very stressful dealing with all the ads, and we got everything done. It's a double issue this week, and it's, I'm glad. And then Sunday, I went in for my second shot, for the Pfizer, shot for COVID-19, and I was just wiped out Monday and Tuesday. I mean, I just want to tell everybody out there that I don't know if that's everybody's reaction, but a Sunday night I woke up in the middle of the night with chills, and it took me a while just to start feeling warm again. And then Monday I woke up, my arm hurt, my whole body. I felt like I got hit by a truck, and all my muscles ached. I didn't have a headache, but I was just so sore and I didn't feel like doing anything but just laying around. I had to come in the office to make sure that everything got done for the Passover issue and help Melissa and the staff and everybody else get everything done. And then I just went home and slept.
Well,
and Tuesday I felt like I was terrible. Anyway, your kids, they all went to the same place.
So, right. So my son-in-law and daughter both got their shot. Well, we were out of town. We went to Asheville. We went to Asheville from Wednesday until Monday.
Right.
Great time. We rented through Vrbo. We had a great house there. And they took a drive to Johnson, Tennessee, the song, and they got their shot at a Kroger there. And they said a couple things they noticed. First of all, that it was a Kroger in Johnson, Tennessee. It said that you had to have a mask, and a lot of people inside were not wearing a mask. And the pharmacist told them that they can't get enough people to fill the spots in Johnson, Tennessee to take the shots.
Really?
And my kids got in there easily. They showed up early. The pharmacist just said they can't get enough people.
Have a seat.
Yeah.
It was interesting because when, for my first shot that you said, I thank you immensely doing that. I know.
You sent a nice note.
You went up to the Rite Aid in Dayton, and it was just packed with people. There was actually people that got turned away that day because I knew a couple of people that got turned away. And then there was probably 30 or 40 people that were in line, and probably, I was like number 20, and then there was like 20 or 30 behind me. There might have been more. And then when you went back, I had a specific time, 4 o'clock. So I get up there. There's like nobody there. And I walked in, and the pharmacist and all the staff is there.
Yeah, was that Adi there?
Yeah, he was there. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
Who writes in Chinese.
Right.
That's a whole other story. And I go and I say, I'm here for my He goes, just have a seat. I'll be with you in like a minute. And let me get you set up. Boom, comes over, gives me the shot. Says, just have a seat here for like 15 minutes. Then about 5 minutes later, like 5 or 6 people show up. And they're like, I said, what time are you guys? Well, we're 4:30. I was like, yeah, I just got here like 5 minutes before it, like 3:55, and they were like already early. And he said, "Just hold on, everybody, have a seat and relax." And they were all time slotted.
Yeah.
So there was no. It wasn't like the first shot where everybody was all. It was just backed
up.
That's
good to hear.
And,
you didn't have a time slot for the first shot.
No,
no,
you just
it was
went.
Kind of
you just
random.
Went.
You went all the way to Dayton to wait in line for
2 hours.
It's a long story.
And then you should listen to it. Then I got thrown out of the line.
What did you do?
Nothing. Julie.
He opened his mouth and he started talking.
That's a whole nother. You'd have to listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
But Julie set it up and all this kind of stuff.
I wanted to make sure he got shot.
Yeah, I got shot. All right. I got a shot, all right.
So my kids, the next day we actually drove home and they both said they felt fine. I gotta put a little aside here. So we had this interesting drive home. It was a beautiful, on the way in, it was storming terribly through the mountain, and it was the middle of the night, it was dark. On the way home, it was like a day like a day. It was beautiful. The weather's great. And I had bought Melissa these little visors that go up on your window so the sun doesn't shine on the new baby.
Right.
And she decided, Melissa, that she wanted us to have a little diversion, a little fun for the day. So we had made a pit stop, and she fed the baby, and we're waiting for the baby to digest. And she decided, with the stickers on the window that are there to protect the child from the sun, to roll down the window. Well, lo and behold, the window of my brand-new car got jammed, and we still had 5 hours left, and we couldn't get the window up because this thing had stopped the automatic. So Melissa decided that we should take a little trip into Knoxville, an hour out of our direction, and sit in the mini store while they opened up my brand new car door and removed the shade out of my car.
Oh, you had to get that shade out of there.
Yeah,
it was all jammed up in there.
Mm-hmm.
How come you didn't take the shade out of the way before you took the window down?
You need to ask Melissa that.
Okay.
She's a little sleep deprived. So,
yes, yeah. Okay.
But they were very nice. I have to give a plug for the mini in Knoxville, Tennessee. They were very nice to us. They took me in right away, and it was a mere
$100. It looks like it's fixed now because I see the window is up.
Yeah, a mere $100.
Okay. All right. Well, so to get into the news and start with the paper.
Well, it is the Passover edition, we have a beautiful drawing.
Clearly the clear winner this year.
Eva Sarenbach, who is the granddaughter of Gita and Ian Sarenbach, members also of Adith Israel, and I believe Gita is an esthetician.
Okay.
And Ian is a doctor, but this is their granddaughter, Eva. She's 10 years old, and I'm going to assume that she's at Rockburn.
It's very nice. It's got the Seder plate. It's got from the different symbols.
The handwriting's beautiful. The Hebrew looks very beautiful.
Nice. She did a very good job on this, so it's hats off to her for this one. This is very nice.
And I believe her parents won an award, maybe. Remember we had one of those JCC awards recently in the spring, and I believe it was the Sarah Box that won that award.
What, like a volunteer award?
Yeah, either maybe? That or it was the Aunt Sarah Box. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, well, so this is one of the winners, and then there's another winner on the second section, and then we're going to put the other runners up in the paper for this week and next week and the week after. So everybody that submitted a coloring contest for Passover, you'll see your entry in the paper over the next couple weeks, and then they will be taken to Mark's Hot Bagels, and after Passover, because I don't want to get near the, I might have to avoid the Hametz, but I might just take them there anyway. Yeah, and
getting their Hametz on up, you is something new.
It really is. You got to like wash like a few times if you get the Hametz on you,
It's intense.
It's intense.
Anyway. I want to swing back to something that we talked about last week. We talked about, speaking of children and Rockburn and art and all these beautiful children, I had mentioned that there was a decrease in the number of babies born during COVID and in impregnations.
Right.
So there is going to be, they're predicting a 300,000 decrease in the number of babies born as a result
of
COVID.
Because of afraid fear, to get the COVID?
Fear of getting pregnant during this time, so maybe they used better birth control. Bickering?
a lot more bickering, yes. There's definitely more bickering going on. Yes, that's definitely probably true.
So I wanted to give that number out. And the other thing I brought in to show everyone, we had talked about how I'm part of the trials from Johnson & Johnson, and I had the shot. So we had talked about what was this pulse oximeter that they gave me. So I brought it in to show it to you. It's a clip that goes on your finger.
Right.
And you asked me if I have to give it back, and I said, no, this is mine for life.
And what does it do?
It takes your pulse, and and it gives you a bunch of stuff. I think your temperature and
how much oxygen is in your bloodstream.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and then
it's such a little thing, too.
I know.
It's amazing.
So I brought that in to show you.
Technology is amazing.
We have another new columnist.
Yes,
we're going to have him come in, Richard Katz, who is our new sports columnist. And
attorney Richard Katz.
Yes, he is
Esquire.
I read in this article that he was Bob Huggins' attorney. Now, didn't Bob Huggins get into trouble for something? Was he the attorney for the trouble?
He was doing a little drinking and driving, yes. Okay. He got a little trouble with that. And I think he even, I won't go into the other stuff, but I heard there was some stuff going on.
He's a little naughty.
Yeah, he was a little naughty.
He's a little naughty. And he's also, like both of you, Walnut Hill graduates.
Yes, he's an Eagle.
And he worked for the Walnut Hill School Chatterbox, and he went to University of Cincinnati. Where did you both go to college?
UC.
Ohio U.
Oh, U, that's right. You were Ohio U and you're UC. So, yeah. So I'm with some purebreds here. Cincinnati purebred. So he fits right in there. Very nice, very nice.
And then we have your community calendar on the next page, so check out all the different, there's a bunch of Seders going on in virtual Seders, and I think this is the last year of virtual Seders because everything will be live and in person next year.
Yeah, and I think Sunday they're doing something. I know at Edith Israel I got an email. There's some sort of a ceremony going on, or I know it's a service. There's a service on Sunday for the end of Passover, and I believe they're going to do a lot of prayers for the country and healing and stuff during that.
Okay. All right.
And you're also looking for, if anyone's looking for a job, a accounting bookkeeper office.
Well, we found one.
Oh, you found one. Wonderful.
Yeah, she starts tomorrow.
Okay, well, good.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we don't see the ad in next week.
No, you won't. No. All right. In international news, the French government to return a Klimt painting looted from an Austrian Jew.
I love his work.
Yeah.
And the movie about it, it involved that Cincinnati attorney. Did you see that movie, Gail, where it was the Cincinnati attorney that would help get the paintings back, the Klimt paintings?
No.
It was a wonderful movie.
And also, he's related to Howard Mayer's. It's his son-in-law, Randy, I forget his name, Schoenfeld, I think. I think it's Schoenfeld. His grandfather was the famous composer, Schoenfeld. Yeah. They live in L.A.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. There's a Cincinnati connection. All right. Also an international, matzah is being shipped to Saudi Arabia.
So I'm going to let Gail speak on this more, but there's 650 pounds. So if each person eats a pound of matzah, that's only accounting for 650 people. What do you think about that number, Gail? How much do you think people eat?
You mean during the week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, for the Seder, I mean, it may be a total of a pound.
I don't know. And I don't know if, this is just for individuals or for communities. But, all of these Arab states that have recently formed relations with Israel are drawing a lot of, in particular, Israeli tourists.
Right.
Dubai is
exploding
with Israeli tourists, and
a lot of the other places too.
There is at least two kosher restaurants or a kosher caterer who delivers to hotels and things, and a kosher restaurant. Kosher food is available.
Yeah,
I mean, it all happened really quickly because
they want Israelis the Jews
love
there,
to, and Israelis love to travel.
Right,
and it's not that far for them.
Right, right,
and it's supposed to be a really interesting city.
Well, we know of at least two Cincinnatians who have been in the Middle East and traveled there. I mean, I can think of more, but we know. Of course, we know about Michael Basson, who wrote that book, I'm Not a Spy.
Right.
And then I believe Toby Snow's daughter was living there in one of the countries. I'm not sure particularly which country, but they do need matzah. I don't know how they probably would have had. But a lot of them also, do you think they hide their identity when they're living in those countries or visiting?
Well, I don't know how many people are living there, but as tourists,
they could be a contractor working on the electrical grid, or
there could be Jews from all over the world.
They could be doing all kinds of stuff.
And until recently, until the accords were recently signed,
if
you had a passport that had a stamp that you had been to Israel, you could not get into these
places.
So you had to get a brand new passport.
Right.
I have a cousin in Australia who worked for IBM for many years, and he was born in Israel.
Right.
And he had to get a separate passport to travel to those countries, years ago.
Right.
Because having been born in Israel, he could not get in.
Yeah. Huh. So speaking of matzah, how many boxes do you buy for your family? And
So I buy the 5-pound pack,
and
my sister bought a 5-pound pack.
Right.
And between us, we probably will have 2 or 3 boxes left.
Okay.
This is the first year. So after Pesach last year, my husband kept eating matzah.
Right.
And he's been eating matzah all year. He eats it every morning. And this is the first time ever that happened. And at Purim, I stopped buying it. And he said, "We're out of matzah." And I said, "It's 1 month away. You have to stop eating matzah." And he says, "No, I'm keeping going. I'll stop 1 week before." So last week he stopped. He ate his last piece of matzah. So that now, if we have leftovers, we'll just eat them.
So I also have that kind of, because we koshered our kitchen, got everything ready a week before, like last week. And so technically you're allowed to eat egg matzah.
Right.
Which is not really matzah, because you're not supposed to eat matzah until Passover officially starts. But if you're eating egg matzah,
until you say motzi at the Seder.
Bingo. So I'm eating egg matzah now till I get to this point where I can eat real matzah.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, there's always some kind of like workaround, in Judaism or Orthodoxy that you can live with.
So it seems like, Gail, you've had an extensive Jewish education. You grew up at Adith Israel, conservative. Were you raised conservative? It sounds even more like you might have been a little bit more.
So, no, not Orthodox. I'm a conservative Jew with a capital C. I'm a big fan of the conservative movement. I did grow up at Adith Israel, and my parents were Holocaust survivors, and were not terribly religious. I grew up eating kosher style at But that was really largely because my mother did not know how to cook anything else.
My mom didn't know how to cook at all either.
No, my mom was a very good cook, but she only knew how to cook what she grew up eating. I was much more of a shul goer than the rest of my family because I sang in Cantor Chaim Feifel's children's choir. He just passed away recently.
Oh. Yeah.
But I loved him, and when you sang in the choir, you had to come to junior congregation every single week.
Okay.
And, of course, bat mitzvah ceremonies were not done on Saturday morning at that time. They were Friday night.
Right.
And there were a lot of kids in those years. So
yeah,
I was in shul every Friday night and every Saturday morning for most of my childhood. Later, when I left Cincinnati with my husband and we moved to Washington, we were both invited to be part of the Wexner Heritage Foundation's adult education program.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very intensive
education. It's still ongoing now.
Yes.
We
did the full 2 years. Then we continued studying in Washington with our class.
Right.
Then we moved to Milwaukee, where there was also a class. We studied with them. We studied in New Jersey. But, you know, it was ongoing. Plus, the library that they build for you when you're in the Wexner program is amazing, and they continue to send books to alumni every year. And so, yeah, I've done a lot of education as an adult.
And you also have an extensive education and background. You went to UC undergraduate, and you started out almost like, I believe, in technical, but then you moved into this cooking and baking and writing recipes. So explain that, how you got there. And
so I studied communication when I was in school, and I also got a certificate in business administration. That was the compromise I made with my father to study communication, which he thought was, you know, about as useful as basket weaving at the time. But the whole time I was in college, I was working in restaurants. I worked at La Rosa's. I worked at Uncle Woody's and was a waitress at Uncle Woody's before I was 21. And I worked at the Westin Hotel when it first opened in banquet service.
Right.
And when I graduated from college, I broke up with a boyfriend and couldn't find a real job, quote unquote. And I ended up working at the James Tavern.
Okay.
Which became Parker's, which I just closed. I worked at James Tavern for 3 or 4 years, and there I tended bar and I waited tables, and I learned how to eat, really how to eat fine food. And I started cooking when I was in college as
well.
Yeah,
you belonged to a co-op, I read.
I belonged to a food co-op that was in the basement of a church on the corner of Clifton and McMillan, where there's a coffee shop now.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And in order to belong to the co-op, you paid $5 a month, and you had to work for 5 hours. So you did things like weigh out and bag raisins and cut and wrap cheese. And it was, you know, environmentally sound at the time. They had huge vats of honey and oil and all kinds of things. You brought your own jars. You filled them up. That's the way. That was to keep the cost down. Hmm. And so that's where I found brown rice and whole grains and raw honey for the first time.
Huh.
So I started cooking, and then when I left the tavern, I really did not want to work in the restaurant business full time because of the hours, and so I found a job as a technical writer. I was able to recast the whole time I was working in restaurants, I was writing. The whole time I was writing, I was doing food. So I recast my resume as technical writing, and I got a job doing that. And I worked at Senco Products Newtown. And until I left here and with my then fiance and moved to Washington, D.C. And I did that for about 20 years,
mm-hmm.
technical writing. And I was very good at it, and I really, really loved it. But as time went by, the work was less technical and started becoming more, public relations slanted, you know, it wasn't as straightforward. I loved the technical writing because it was really straightforward and very honest. When I started having to do work that I didn't feel was as straightforward, I didn't want to do it anymore. In the meantime, I was still working for PricewaterhouseCoopers when I started my first kosher food business, which was called Zahava Foods, my own name.
Okay.
And it was an online business where I sold gourmet dry goods from Israel online. And I started it was a complete fluke. It was during the first intifada when tourism to Israel really came to pretty much of a grinding halt. And I'm sure it must have happened here in Cincinnati too. They brought these Israeli expos. They had them either at the JCCs or the big synagogues where you could go. Artists came and people who sold jewelry and stuff. So you could come and buy things from Israel and support these vendors. At the same time, was going to the fancy food shows in New York every year. And I met a young couple who had purchased a kind of classic Israeli company, the Pyramid Zatars. I don't know if you traveled to Israel back then.
Right.
Zatar was something that you bought, you know, as a in the duty-free shop on the way out. And it came in a pyramid-shaped container. And I knew the product from going to Israel and buying it and using it.
Right.
I met this young couple that had bought the company. They changed the box from cardboard to plastic so the product would keep.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this tiny, tiny, tiny table at the food show, and they were looking for distribution. And I took all of their information, and, you know, I didn't think there was really anything I could do for them. When these expos started, and they started bringing in all these people, I called them up, and I said, you know, they're doing this thing here in America. If you send me a case of your pyramids, I'll try to sell them, and I'll send you the money.
Yeah.
Right? Just to do it to help them. When I said a case, I expected 24. They sent me a pallet size case. It was 524 units.
Wow. Yeah.
They had 9 flavors.
Hey.
I sold it all in one day.
Wow.
Really?
And
wow.
Yeah. And a month later, I got a call from another town over. I was living in New Jersey at the time, so it's one town after the other after the other, and everyone has its own JCC.
Hmm.
I got a call from one town over and said, are you going to come do our expo with your spices? And I said, okay. So I called them back, and I said, send me more, and they did, and I sold them all again.
Hmm.
And I said, you know what? This looks starting to look like a business. So I worked with them first, and I built this website, and, you know, looked specifically for products that were going to be shelf stable, easy to ship, not too heavy, iconic Israeli products, and from smaller companies that didn't have huge distribution in the States.
Right.
On the East Coast, when you live in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, New Jersey, you can get everything in even in a regular grocery store.
Not in Cincinnati.
No. Not any
you
farther.
You can a little bit, but not as
not
much.
Even no yeah. Nothing here yeah. really compared.
Well, the grocery store in Asheville had a nice Passover setup.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
This is not even just for Passover. I mean, you know, in a regular grocery store, not one with a Jewish kosher experience.
Right.
On the East Coast, you can get a really wide variety,
prices are
much better, yeah.
Yes, but you're not shipping we complain it. You don't have
about
to
the
ship it.
Right, we complain about the Passover markets here, and
right.
We can't say too much because these are advertisers, but it's, you know, it's difficult here.
It needs to be built through education,
They send a special truck here. I mean, it's not like it is there.
Yeah.
But anything farther than Philadelphia, even Pittsburgh, you really can't get much. Yeah. And I used to come to Cincinnati all the time. I could not buy Zatar. I could not buy Israeli olive oil in Cincinnati. And I said, you know, this looks like a business if I sell it online.
Mm-hmm.
And so I built this website and I started selling all of these products online. And I built...
Are you still involved with these?
So...
Because you know what? I can get you an in into Kroger's. I could get you a whole couple of shelves there for Passover stuff.
I don't do this anymore. I still know plenty of vendors.
They would love if we could get that set up.
They would love to get into a store like Kroger's because they are selling really high quality products.
Yeah.
Really, you know, small companies that are
remind me to bring this up with me in a day or two.
Absolutely.
And I'll make a phone call.
Absolutely.
Because this town needs that kind of help here.
Yes, it does.
And maybe that would start a trend across the whole Midwest and across a lot of places.
The problem is it's expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's expensive to ship product this far from, I mean, everything comes in on boats to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And they put it on trucks and they drive it to ShopRite in New Jersey. It's an hour.
Yeah.
It's not driving it 12 hours to Cincinnati, one truck at a time.
Right.
So I had this business. And interestingly enough, I did great at Rosh Hashanah, Hanukkah, and Pesach.
Yeah.
But during the year, the largest portion of my customers were actually Christians who support Israel.
Yeah. They want Israeli products. Mm.
They support Israel very strongly. I went to their conference, the CUFI conference, Christians United for Israel. That was a really interesting experience. I was the only Jew out of 3,000 Israel-loving Christians.
Wow.
Let me tell you, I ate lunch three times one day because they wouldn't take no for an answer. they kept inviting me, you know, to be with them and talk to them, and they literally wanted to touch me.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
You know, I liked, going back to what I read on the Kugel Chronicles, I liked, you know, you have a lot of, you have this artistic end to you, and you make your Passover, or you make menus up and you list your food. So I brought my stuff in this is my cookbook. I told Ted obviously doesn't have his own personal cookbook, but this is.
No, I don't have, but that thing looks like I've never, it's like a 4-inch binder.
It is. It's a huge binder. And then I keep in the front of it previous menus and who I had for dinner and what I served so that I remember not to serve people. I remember my mother did that. I used to find that my mother had notes down on who she served and what she ate, and so I started doing the same thing. But you have divided Passover prep into like five clear steps. You have cleaning, switching dishes, shopping, cooking, and then kind of sealed with a kiss. Keep it simple, silly. You want to expound on that for us?
Well, sure. I mean, I did it. If we fast forward in my career to just a few years ago, when I was living in Central Jersey and I was doing cooking classes in my home and I was working at the kosher deli of a large regional grocery store, Wegmans, and I was doing like demos for sisterhoods and Hadassah chapters and that sort of thing. And when it got to Pesach, people were complaining and panicking and asking me all kinds of questions. And I started thinking about how do I do this and what is it that they really need help with? And so when you talk about cleaning, I mean, you have to kosher. If you are someone who keeps kosher.
Observant.
On a regular basis all year. Right. Or like my mother did not keep a strictly kosher home, but she koshered for Pesach and had separate dishes for Pesach.
Right.
One set, but separate for Pesach.
Right.
So depending on how far you're going to go.
What's your level of observance is.
You must clean your kitchen.
Right.
It feels good to do it, though.
Right. You have to clean your kitchen. There's
spring
no question.
Spring cleaning.
It's wonderful.
And you clean out your fridge.
That's where spring cleaning came from because of us and cleaning for Bazaar. Now it's universal.
Everybody does.
Well, one year I was subbing at Yavna, and I couldn't get. And my parents were actually visiting, and my mother cleaned my kitchen for me. It was wonderful.
That's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Where's she at now?
My mom. She's in Chicago.
Is she going to come down here and clean your kitchen for Passover?
No, I did it already.
A little late, yeah. So you must clean your kitchen and really well. You want to get the crumbs out. Right, you want to take the time to really do the inside of the oven and all of those things, and put away the toaster oven. Right, you don't have to
microwave.
Right, if you can kosher your microwave for Pesach.
Yeah, you put water in there and let till it boils over. And
you want to, so you do what you need to do in your own kitchen, depending on whether you. But you
level
don't have to empty every single cabinet.
No, you can just
seal them shut.
Right. Seal them up, right?
So you don't have to schlep all the time everything from one place to the other.
I know people
empty
that,
one cabinet.
Right.
You only need what you need for your family for the week. So if you have separate dishes and please, I really don't like eating off of plastic plates.
I don't either.
I don't
if there's
mind it.
Anything that
plastic.
You can do to get a set of glass.
Food
or
tastes
cheap,
better on glass.
Yeah, for
well, but if glass, you have to toivel it.
Right, but it can.
So that's a whole
separate,
different level of observance.
But I have it separate glass dishes for Pesach.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I have 24 people for the Seder, I can put away 20 of those dishes right after the Seder are over because I only need four for the week.
So
that's one thing. You only keep what you need. Keep your implements that you buy that you need, that you kosher.
Right,
or that
it's a
you
whole
need,
separate.
To a minimum. You right. really, all you need is a good sharp knife. You don't need all of those little doodads. I know some people are really
doodaddy.
Doodad lovers, all those little implements.
Yes.
But you really don't need them, and you certainly don't need a whole second or third right. set for Pesach.
Right.
But of course, if you're having company, you want your house to be clean. You want right. your house to be clean anyway. But you don't need to go through all the drawers and all the kids' rooms
right.
and take out all the clothes and refold them and look for chametz. If there's a piece of gum at the bottom of that drawer, it gets covered when you sell your chametz. And you're just making it harder on yourself, and you're making yourself crazy if you are cleaning every single room in your house top to bottom for Pesach. There's enough other work to be done.
Sure.
That you could, if you really want to do those top to bottoms, do them later in the spring, but focus on the kitchen. The other thing is, after here, I'll go have my car washed.
Right. Right. That vacuumed. Place, they do a great job. I was yeah. there this morning. Get all that hummus
That's
out of the car.
That's what I'm planning on doing after this, too, because we have a lot of mud from hiking in Asheville.
Yeah, they do a great job right there.
And, okay. You know, there
give
was,
them a nice tip. Give them a nice tip.
Always. There was a, there
Actually,
was a.
Actually, you should. I'll,
mention your name.
No. I'll print you out a coupon for the works that I was. I have they have a coupon online that it's really cheap for the works. That they do a really good job with the works, and it's like $17 plus $1.
Perfect.
For a
Thank you, Ted.
But remind me to do that, and I'll go online and print you out the coupon.
So
that's what you want to take the coupon.
When we lived in New Jersey, there was a car wash in Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
In Livingston. If you brought your car in for Pesach cleaning and got the works, they gave you a box of matzah.
Oh, that's cute.
So, and it was like a community thing because my husband would take his car and then he would come home and take my car, and he ran into every, it was the place to be.
That's cute. That's very
cute. Everybody did it. Right.
Everybody did it.
Right. And then as far as cooking, and you said keep it simple.
So keep it simple, certainly for the rest of the week. And you don't need... At Seder, you don't need chicken and brisket. You don't need kugel and potatoes. You don't need three kugels. You don't need broccoli and asparagus and carrots and salad. Make a normal meal. You know, you have what you eat during the Seder. Of course, you have your haroset and the other special foods. In my house, we eat a lot of snacks, and then we limit the meal. But even if you don't, you have the egg, you have fish, you have soup.
You have lettuce too. Romaine.
You're so full anyway.
You're so full. Then
it's like
people
coming
make
out of
this,
your eyeballs.
Make this enormous meal with multiples
and
of
it's
everything.
Like at 11 o'clock at night. Too.
And what happens is you end up with that same food all week. Right. And every time you warm it up, it gets browner and browner and drier
and
drier.
Your belly is so distended.
And no wonder nobody likes Pesach. So it's worried about what they can eat at Pesach. You make just enough that you need for the Seders. So in the community that we lived in. In northern Jersey, and our kids were in day school, it was always spring break. So we had Seder 1, Seder 2. The third night, we got together, because all of their friends were out of school. We got together with all of our buddies. Everybody brought their leftovers from Seder. We ate them all up, and we swapped, so we didn't have the same food.
That's cute.
And, of course, we had company all week because the kids were out of school. But you don't need all of that stuff for the Seders. So... make just what you need. Then during the week, all you have to eliminate is bread and pasta. You can make
lots of fresh fruits and vegetables.
Fresh fruits and vegetables. You need meat, chicken, fish, eggs. You need matzah meal a little bit. You need matzah, and you need fresh produce. And you...
you can get, like, pasta that's...
But why?
It's not the same.
You can't live without pasta for 1 week.
You know what? I was with a buddy a couple years ago, and he was talking about the fact that what you're really getting rid of is yeast.
Yeah. No, that's not true.
Okay, all right. Well, let me...
leavening.
The gluten and all that. So, all right, so when you get rid of, like, bread, which has gluten and yeast... Let me just finish. Yeast and all that stuff. You basically, you cleanse your body of all that stuff, and you're cleansing, you know, a lot of all that food out of your body, and you actually... It's a healthy thing to do that. I'm serious.
If you get plugged up and then you have to go for the unplug. Right.
So matzah has gluten.
Right.
I mean, there is gluten-free matzah.
Right.
But matzah is made from wheat. It right. just is not allowed to rise. And it's not the yeast that is the chametz. What makes chametz is when wheat or any of the other four grains that
it's
you're
the
not...
water.
Comes in contact with water.
Right, right.
And swells.
Right.
So it's not about gluten. It's not about sugar, right, which we eat a lot of at Pesach, especially, you know, this is another thing, Julie, I don't understand. I follow all of these blogs and Facebook pages on kashrut and Pesach, and
right.
it's dessert after dessert after dessert recipe. Like, do these people only eat dessert at Pesach? It's either that, you know, Pesach is the only time of year they eat dessert, or all they eat at Pesach is dessert. You don't need all of that stuff. I don't eat cakes and bake all week long, every right. single week.
Right.
So, you know, throw a steak on the grill, baked potato, yeah. and a salad.
I eat all that.
And you're done. Yeah. You don't need okay. all that stuff.
Yeah, dessert right. is dessert is my main meal. But what's your favorite Passover food?
Oh, God, I can't even say. I don't know, because I don't do a lot of these really specific kosher LePesach yeah. things. I'm not making it this year, but there's a celery root, sweet and sour celery root and carrot salad that I really love that I make when I have a big Seder because everybody else likes it except my family.
Okay.
But, you know, after the Seders, we will just eat normal meals. Chicken and fish. I'll have a cheese platter with fruit one night with a really great bottle of wine.
I want to be invited to your house.
As soon as COVID allows.
Hey, we've all been vaccinated. What are you talking about?
Have you ever had a big kitchen disaster? Like where, you know, you totally, like, I've burnt a soup and had to start over. I've had a lot of kitchen disasters. But I once made a Cincinnati chili and the whole thing spilled on the floor.
Oh, that's pretty bad. Yeah. That's not really a cooking disaster, though. No, I don't have a lot of disasters. I will say, so the previous food writer for The Israelite was Zell Shulman.
Zell, yeah.
God bless Zell Shulman. And I have all of her cookbooks.
Yeah.
I'm a huge, huge fan. Yep, and yep, in yep. one of her Pesach cookbooks, she has a recipe. I mean, it has to go back to the 70s or 80s. It's a recipe for a lemon jello mold with horseradish, carrots, and celery.
Hmm. Oh.
And it's the picture in the book is gorgeous.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I did. And it was pretty awful because it's the lemon jello was sweet. You know, it's jello is a sweet
right,
dessert.
Right.
So the following year, I made it with plain jello and lemon juice so it wouldn't be so sweet and extra horseradish. And it was equally awful. And I actually went to school with Alan Shulman, one of Zell's children. He was in my class at Walnut Hills, and yep. I messaged him about it, and he was like, what are you doing? She put a lot of stuff in those books that we never ate at home. So I never tried that one again.
That reminds me, I had a recipe that someone had given me in the 80s, the early 80s. It was called pretzel salad, and I loved it. It was pretzels and jello and whipped cream. And I'll tell you, everyone made fun of that recipe. I thought it was outstanding.
Anything that has to do with like pretzels and chocolate or pretzels and something else.
I love the sweet and salty together.
Yeah. Well, my kids love Rice Krispie treats, so I make great. And I have a new thing now, Rice Krispie treats dipped in chocolate tahina.
Mm.
Talk about, you know, sending you into diabetic heaven.
Yeah, I would be like, apoplectic on the floor. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, so moving on, we'll come back, do some more. So we wanted to finish Israel news, and there was an incident at the Jerusalem Biblical Zoo with a lion that was dragging around his meal. And we really don't want to talk about that. But that's on page 10. Go check it out and find out what the meal was.
Yeah. Ooh. On Community Connections, we have Ethel Nemoff, who celebrated her 106th birthday, as well as Helen Benjamin, who celebrated her 100th. Now, Ethel's story came in from Susan Farber, a former employee here. She had mentioned that she's friends with Mindy and Steve Nemoff, and she wanted us to make sure that we caught all the good stuff about Ethel. And as always, Kathy Sachs has some wonderful community stories in here also about David Kobe, Ariel Schnuller, and Leo Kobe. So catch those. Catch those stories on that page.
Check it out.
Yep.
All right. And we have a new business we're now promoting, and that's Sweet Butter Bakery. And Bob Wilhelmy did a review of Sweet Butter Bakery on page 14.
So she started out as a social worker, so she too didn't start out in the food business. Mm-hmm. Very similar to you, and she's in the early stages of building this business, and you told us it's called a ghost kitchen that she's using.
Right, so a ghost kitchen is when a business that has a kitchen, whether it's a restaurant or a caterer or a grocery store or a synagogue,
right,
rents out their kitchen
right.
by the hour for people who have businesses where they need a kitchen but don't have their own space.
Like a startup.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
Right, there are, you know, people that
established run, that just use
people who yeah. make their right. own salsa,
right.
right? They rent out a kitchen twice a month for right. 2 days and make all they can sell, and
right.
they don't ever need their own facility. Because of COVID, when every restaurant in the state shut down,
right?
The idea of having using ghost kitchens really exploded,
yeah.
And a lot of people who were in the restaurant business or catering or could cook,
right.
formed relationships with closed restaurants to share their kitchens, so they were making the food and for pickup or delivery. And I will tell you that when I was in New Jersey and I was cooking for a living, and what I was doing was extremely illegal because I was cooking at home and delivering food to my customers who were mostly elderly, and it was kosher. And I could not for my life make a deal to rent time in any kind of a kosher kitchen. And I tried at several synagogues, and
right.
nobody wanted to take the leap. They just didn't get it, even
yeah.
though I tried to explain this is a great source of revenue for especially a small synagogue.
Now they probably do it.
Not so much. Okay. I mean, maybe they will start to, but there are lots and lots of people out there who have that great cookie recipe or have that great soup recipe, and people say, you know, you should sell this stuff.
I did. I sold my challah at Pipkins, and it became the dog got fatter. My house was always full of flour.
Right.
It was too much.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there, and they don't.
Wasn't that challah back girl?
Challah back girl, yeah.
Like mm-hmm. challah back, like holler,
yeah.
holler
yeah.
back.
Oh, yeah, you had to see my website. It was very
yeah,
cute that,
yeah,
that
yeah. Holla, anyway, we're talking
challah
today.
Challah's the new booty call.
Okay. God, it's like, all right, so we're talking today about, and actually this is Erica Hecht, and so we're all...
Sam Hecht is her dad, her husband.
Husband, and then we all know Cheryl, who I worked with for many years, who I love dearly, who's the greatest person, and Steve Hecht, yeah, her husband, but they're a wonderful family, and she's got her new company, so check it out. We give you directions of how to get a hold of them and contact them and order some food. So please do. All right. So we
after Pesach. Yeah.
After Pesach. we move on to from the pages, and we are at in the beginning. This is from Samuel Brule, which we have been continuing on, The Israelitis Institutions of Cincinnati by Samuel Brule. We trust in the liberality of our benevolent and sympathizing co-religionists and inform them that in Cincinnati there is such a home, the Jewish Hospital, for any of our unfortunate sick brethren, stranger or resident, who may be desirous to avail themselves of its salutary benefits. Any donation, legacy, or otherwise, which the kindness of our wealthy sons of the Holy Covenant may be willing to donate, will be thankfully received and publicly acknowledged by the undersigned directors, Jacob Asos, President, Hyman Moses, Vice President, Henry Goldberg, Treasurer, Henry Myers, Secretary, Dr. M. Bettman, Physician, and M. Wexler, House Steward. This is from July 21, 1854.
Mm. Wow, and then there's a advertisement for Simon and Weil's new matzah bakery at 529 533 East Pearl Street, Cincinnati, Ohio. Where is Pearl Street?
Downtown somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm going to let Gail read our ladies' column because it's about matzo balls.
Right. So 125 years ago, there was a column for the ladies in the paper that explained how to make matzo balls. Soak 3 or 4 matzos in cold water and squeeze them out well. Fry a good-sized chopped onion in a spoonful of fat. Mash and smooth the matzahs in this, adding ginger, pepper, and salt, 4 eggs, and as much matzah meal as will make a paste, stiff enough for rolling into balls. Drop into boiling salt water and let boil for 20 minutes. Boil one ball first to see if you put enough meal in. So it's interesting. There's a few interesting things here. One is that they primarily used actual matzahs to make their matzah balls because matzah meal was not as readily available. I'm not sure even if Manischewitz was at that time making canned matzah meal.
Right, you had
to buy the matzah and mash it up yourself. So you would not, you know, you didn't use it as readily. The other thing is the addition of ginger, which has come up recently, like I said, on some of these Facebook pages. Very common in the past. It seems to have fallen out of favor, but I see many, many recipes with ginger. I love to collect these old, especially kosher Jewish cookbooks.
Right.
And a lot of them have ginger in the matzah balls.
Interesting. Wow. All right. So we're going to skip most of this, but we are going to hop down to 50 years ago. And so I'll do this one, then Julie, you can kick in.
Okay.
Dr. and Mrs. Philip Edlin of 3833 Barker Road announced the forthcoming bar mitzvah of their son, Jory Dean Edlin, Saturday, April 3 at 9 a.m. at Ohav Shalom Synagogue, 1834 Section Road. Relatives and friends are cordially invited to worship with the family and to attend the Kiddush following.
Can you imagine putting your invitation in the paper now and inviting everybody to your Kiddush luncheon?
Yeah. Why not?
800 yeah. people would show
yes,
up.
Yes, there would be a lot of people for that Kiddush. But back then, it was probably not that. I mean, I might have gone to this Kiddush, too, because I was friends with Jory. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk to Jory.
We're going to give him a call right now. Okay, so we have actually got in hold of our bar mitzvah boy, Jory Edlin.
Jory Dean Edlin.
And we are We are going to ask him all about his bar mitzvah.
Well, I have a long, long history with Jory Dean Edlin.
I was going to ask you, did you invite Ted to your bar mitzvah party?
I didn't invite anybody.
I might have just shown up there for the free Kiddush.
So tell me.
Yeah, well, so back in those days, and I guess I don't know, but I didn't have a party for me. My parents had a party for them.
Right.
Okay,
right,
it was just an adult party. Right. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's like kids' parties. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go. Well, let's start from the beginning.
Right.
So you actually are. You've already turned 63. So your bar mitzvah was on April 3rd at 9 a.m. at Ohav Shalom. Who was the rabbi?
You remember more than I do. Rabbi Bernard Greenfield.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who?
And Mr. What was his name? The shaman.
Shulmeister?
Mr. Moskowitz. Mr. Moskowitz.
And
he was before Shulmeister.
And how many years did you go to Hebrew school? How often did you go to Hebrew school to get prepared for this big day of your life?
I did not go to Hebrew school to get prepared. I went to bar mitzvah lessons to get prepared. And the person who taught me my bar mitzvah is Elliot Polonecki.
Oh. Okay.
And he and I are still friends. And every once in a while, well, we used to play racquetball, but he never let me win, so I quit. And I just found, cleaning some stuff out, a cassette tape of his singing my Haftorah portion, which I used to study to learn my Haftorah portion.
Okay.
And what was your Torah and Haftorah portions?
My parshat was Shabbat HaGadol, which I believe was last Saturday.
Was, mm-hmm. yeah. Uh-huh.
It's Saturday before Seder.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's all I remember about it.
And mine was Ki Sisa, which is like a week or two before you.
And Ted is actually going to have an adult bar mitzvah. Week I remind him he needs to start studying for his adult bar mitzvah. So tell me, do you remember giving a Devar Torah? And what may have, if you do remember, what did you talk about, if you do remember?
I did not give a Devar Torah, but I did give a speech. And I do remember a little bit about my speech, because I remember the thing to do was to start off with a list of people that you thanked for helping you. And I started off by listing the people and saying, I'm not going to thank you because I did all the work and I deserve all the credit. And that was my joke. So I did turn around and thank them, of course, because Elliot was instrumental and my parents, of course, paid a lot of money and blah, blah, blah.
And, okay, let's talk about what did you wear and where did you purchase it at? Do you remember what you
wore? Oh, my gosh. So that's incredible. There used to be a guy I went to high school with, along with Ted, whose parents and I guess his grandfather owned a clothing store.
Steinberg.
And it was called?
Elkus.
Steinberg.
Oh, see, there was either Steinberg or Elkus, which would have been Gentry. Either went to Gentry shop or you went to Steinberg's. Yeah,
that's
one.
Correct. And yeah, I think, So we went to Steinberg's. Steinberg's. Yeah. And, and I got my clothing there. I do remember there was one, I guess it was the Sunday brunch when I wore my brother's hand-me-down jacket. I wasn't excited about that. He wore that for his bar mitzvah, and I got to wear it 2 years later.
So what did your bar mitzvah suit look like? Do you remember?
I do not. It was a suit. That's all I remember. I do remember that I had 30 to 50 something inch bell bottoms.
Nice.
So they were like sailor pants.
So that was the suit, or was that the Sunday brunch outfit or the party outfit?
That was the Sunday brunch outfit, yeah. Or it might have been it was probably the Saturday night party outfit. But it had the buttons just like sailor pants that go up the sides and across the front. And, it was dark green, but it was still huge bells because that's bell bottoms, because that's what was in style back then.
Yeah, definitely. You must have been adorable. And so your parents had a party on Saturday night. Where was the adult party at?
At my parents' house in their house in Avondale.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the best part of your bar mitzvah?
Am I allowed to say this? Saturday night, getting to get drunk.
You got drunk when you were 13?
I really did.
Huh?
When I was 13, yep. I did like performing. I did very much like being up on the bima and being, I guess, the center of attention, but mostly just performing, just doing, you know, singing and running the service. I did do that some years later after Greenfield left Ohav Shalom.
Yeah.
I would step up every now and then and run the Shabbos morning service.
What were you drinking? Was it beer or whiskey or wine or alcohol? What were you drinking that you got schnockered?
Well, anything that an adult would put down unfinished, basically.
You were going around, so they'd put their whiskey down, and you would like scoop. You were hiding behind the couch. The hand would reach up from behind the couch, steal the drink, drink it, and then put it back empty, and then he'd go down to the next part of the table.
This is a tradition from
the
ages.
Exactly the picture. That's exactly the picture. I wasn't
it's
alone,
like
a, though.
Remember,
I
had, like in like had, in the was it the Munsters, was it the Munsters where you saw the hand coming up out of the that remember that little box that came out and it got the thing and then went back into the box. That was it.
That was me. That was me.
Kids,
but I have to say,
this.
In all fairness, I wasn't alone. My brothers and my cousins and I were all doing that. So.
Same thing.
Those kids, by after about an hour, those parents were like, I just put that drink down there. What happened to my drink? What?
And you think the caterer staff is really doing a great job cleaning up.
Yeah.
And it's really that the kids are drinking the drinks.
Yeah. That's adorable.
That's funny.
So how did this bar mitzvah influence your life?
I don't know. boy, that's a tough one. I remember my older brother, my second brother, Brian, taking me to shul every Saturday before my bar mitzvah so that I could practice and get good at it. So he did something nice for me, which was unusual. And I remember, and afterwards, when he got to be 16, he used to drive us to shul on Saturday. So, I don't know. It was probably the biggest and the first thing that I worked on for a great deal of time and then succeeded at. So it was something long-term. At age 13, most everything you do and think about is short-term.
Right.
So
it taught you how to lay out a goal and then work towards the goal and then achieve and fulfill the goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just for now, those...
If I do say so myself, I think I did a great job.
Yeah.
Everybody told me that, and yeah. all the old ladies were crying when I sang.
Oh, so,
that's nice.
It was either really good or really bad. I don't know.
For those who don't know you, like, tell us a little bit. So after your bar mitzvah, tell us a little bit about your adult life, what you're doing now, and don't forget to mention your big career here at the American Israelite.
Yes.
Yes, I was an assistant editor for almost 2 years, I think.
Long
time.
And the seat, the indentation on the seat is still on that chair. It's been put away for prosperity stake, and no one has sat in it since.
You took my posterior indent away for posterity, right?
posterior indent away for posterity, right? I was at the time involved with and active in a youth group called Young Judea, which is still around.
Right.
It's a youth group that was attached to Hadassah at the time. I don't know whether they still are. When I got to be 13, I joined the Bar Mitzvah Minyan.
Huh?
And so we would have Minyans every Sunday. And after the first or second one, I didn't really know the people very well, but I was president of the local Young Judea chapter, and they were voting on a president for NCSY. And the guy who was running, nobody liked, so they asked me to run, and I ran, and they voted me in. And that was a lot of work, but it was the National Conference of Synagogue Youth, so that's the Orthodox youth group.
And then where'd you go to college? I was the first
high school graduate of the Hebrew high school.
Okay.
And then I went to Israel. I came back. I had a career in food service. I went back to college and got a degree, started a software company. I worked in that for about 10 years, and then I decided it would be better to give back to the community by teaching. And I got my teaching license, and I taught math and computer science for many years while my parents were transitioning from where they were living by on their own to the facility that they are in, or my dad's in now. I took off and I worked for the Israelite part-time. And once we got that wrapped up, I got into Huntington Learning Center, which is where I am now, Huntington Learning Center in Anderson. And again, it's a teaching thing. So I'm running the center, but I just still get to teach math every once in a while. And I love it. The things that we do for the children that come here are amazing. The kids that come for ACT prep, they get scholarships to the tune of, $40,000 a year free rides.
Wow.
That's, for those of you who are math impaired, $160,000.
Wow.
The kids, the middle school and the younger kids, they struggle. They're usually pretty smart, but they have skill issues. They have holes in their skills.
Right.
And they can struggle because they're smart. They can compensate because they're smart. But at some point they hit a wall, and if their parents bring them here, we then pick up those skills. And in a matter of 3 or 6 months, they go away and school doesn't suck anymore.
Nice.
Yeah. That's no, nice. I struggled with at math at Walnut Hills with, was it Hollis Summers? I remember him, my math teacher. And I could have used those help at Walnut Hills with math. Yeah, we're okay. So
well, right, Jory, this was wonderful to talk with you. Thank
really
you
was.
So much.
Fantastic
for sharing your bar mitzvah story with us. We are thrilled to have you, and I look forward to getting a photo of you in those wild bell bottoms.
I don't think that's going to work. I had a size 26 waist, I think, back then.
Well, I'm talking about a picture from back then. Yeah, you don't have to try and get into those pants now. It's okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, we
want to
thank you for coming on the show.
We appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Have Alrighty. A meaningful and tasty Passover.
Yep. Have a wonderful Pesach.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. So, moving on to columnists, we've got Dr. Ken Mangus with our obsession with food, and he was on with the show. Wonderful. We need to send him a thank you note.
Yes.
Too.
I forgot to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really wonderful.
Yeah. So thank him, and again, we talked a little bit about Bullmania that he talked about in his column, and and also you've got two other columns, one from Sue Liberman, and also Richard Katz, our new columnist, has his column.
Yes. And then we move on to obituaries and death notices.
So James Levine, the famous conductor, he conducted at Chicago Symphony Orchestra in Ravinia, where I grew up, as well as we have our death notices from Cincinnati. We have Sonia Siebler-Strauss, Nee Katzstein, age 93, March 22nd, 2021, the 9th of Nissan, 5781.
Stephen Arnold Blyer, age 75, March 20, 2021, 7 Nissan, 5781.
J. Jerome Jerry Mark, age 92, March 20th, 2021, 7th of Nissan, 5781.
And Harry Mandelbaum, age 88, March 19th, 2021, the 7th of Nissan, 5781.
All right. And then as you turn the pages, you'll see that it's actually a double issue this week. And you've got the second Passover section, which is chock full of information and chock full of stories.
And your second winner, Asher Katz, who is the son of Lauren Galinsky Katz. And he is the grandson of Stephanie and Norman Galinsky.
Yep.
I believe he's also a student at Rockwern.
Right. Yes. So there's tons of stories in this Passover. You know, the rules for Passover, the meaning of Passover, and just quite a few things that you're going to want to read. We're kind of running late today, so we're going to kind of
wrap it up. And next, coming up is your doctor's issue.
Well, that might get bumped. That might get bumped a week or two.
Okay.
We've got Passover going on. I was sick for a few days, and then I'm leaving to go catch fish.
You're going to kill the fish again.
No, I'm not killing.
I know
I'm
you let him go.
Catching and then catching them.
So, just a few more questions for Gail, and then we're going to wrap it up. So, Gail, what do you like? Like, I already talked about my obsession with Rice Krispie treats dipped in chocolate tahini. Sure. What do you have? You know, my house also. My kids love Twizzlers pull and peel. If I want to really tempt them,
Twizzlers pull and peel.
They love Twizzlers pull and peel.
If you're talking about candy wise. Actually, at home, we try not to keep a lot of candy in the house. I love really, really dark chocolate, 88%, that really bitter chocolate, with a cup of tea in the evening. We have a cup of tea every night. I am a huge vegetable fan. My husband, not so much. He prefers fruit and fruit.
Mangoes.
Mango.
Everybody loves a mango.
I love fruit,
everybody
but it
loves
hurts
mango.
My tongue sometimes.
Yeah. Remember that thing from saying everybody loved mango? Mm. Yeah, remember the guy would dance around the gold thing, Old LeMay.
What about you, Ted?
Chris Kattan.
Yeah, what about you? What's your favorite closet eating food?
Yogurt. Yogurt. I get yogurt at Costco, but I can't eat it. Like right now you can't get it because it's not kosher, professor, but I eat yogurt with blueberries. And blackberries, because being diabetic, you have to, I can't, I mean, I love like a piece of cake once in a while, but I can't eat it like all the time.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I like white chocolate.
Wow.
But I can eat, yogurt does not really raise my sugar level. And blueberries don't raise my sugar level. And blackberries don't raise my sugar. So I can have all three. And I love the taste of that.
The mixing.
Mixing.
It's not really too sinful.
I know. I'm not that
sinful. So, Gail, on your website, on the articles I've read about you through the Israelite, you have a statement, a philosophy on what you've learned. And right. Do you want to go over that with us?
So what I talked about was... what I said on the website in the introduction of myself, and I'm going to just put in a plug. My website is www.kugelchronicles.com, where you can read my blog and recipes. Nothing repeated from what I write in the Israelite. So if you want what I write in the Israelite, you're going to have to get it at the Israelite. Anything else is on my website.
And it's on our website, too, so they can go back and read all your columns.
Right, yeah. Right. I go back and read them. And so what I said was I learned that nothing tastes as luscious as a fresh tomato off the vine, hot from the sun. So it's about appreciating really quality product. I learned to listen to the onions frying behind me so I don't have to watch them. I remember the first time I realized that I was doing that. It was, you know, one of those moments. As far as writing is, I learned to edit, and write compelling stories that keep you reading. It's never too late to follow your passion. And this is something I learned from my husband. Incremental improvement is better than postponed perfection. It means get going. Do it. It will never be perfect.
Right.
Don't wait for it to be perfect.
Right.
Just
right.
jump in and do what you need to do now.
Right.
And get better as you go.
Right. And it's like evolution, one step at a time.
Absolutely.
Towards evolution versus revolution. I believe in that too, that whole philosophy. That takes, well, I think that's, you grow into that as you get older, I think. It's an evolutionary thing. So, all right, so we are want to thank our guest, Gail.
It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Really fun.
Thanks for being one of our columnists in the paper. All right, so we are going to move on to Joke of the Week, which I don't think I've done this since my mom died.
You did one last week. It was terrible.
It was. It really was.
Terrible.
That really was a terrible joke, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was horrible. Frank and Lena are in their retirement home down in Florida. Frank calls his son and says, "Look, son, I've been married for 45 years to your mother, and I cannot take it anymore. I'm out of here. I can't take the vetching and the criticism. I'm getting my own apartment. I'm leaving." The son says, "Dad, don't do anything until I get back to you." The son immediately calls his sister and says, "Look, sis, I just got this call from Dad. My mom and dad are going to get a divorce. We can't let this happen. We have to stop it. Why don't we go down to Florida and talk them out of it?" So they agree. He talks to his father and says, "Look, Dad, don't do anything rash. We're going to come down. We're going to talk to you face to face and show you the reasons not to get a divorce. When's the best time to come?" He says, "Come on down on Friday. Stay the weekend. Maybe leave Monday. We'll talk." "Okay, we'll see you on Friday." Frank hangs up the phone, turns to his wife and says, "Good news. The kids are coming for Seder, and they're paying their own airfare." That's actually pretty good. From Old Jews Telling Jokes by Sam Hoffman with Eric Spiegelman, joke by Dennis Spiegelman. And that's all she wrote.
Well, we want to wish everyone a Shavuot Tov, a kosher and delicious
Pesach.
A season Pesach.
Yeah, good Pesach and easy and peasy fat, you know, everything. Not a fast one.
The eldest.
Wonderful Seder.
Yeah.
Two wonderful Seders.
The oldest.
Right. I think this thing is Thursday. Yeah, I think it's Thursday. The firstborn fast. Fast of the firstborn.
It's not Friday?
Maybe it's Friday. Okay, you're probably right. I don't know. I don't know anything.
You're not the firstborn.
No, I'm second born.
Well, I'm the firstborn, but
I'm not fasting.
I'm the firstborn, too.
Yeah. All right, so we want to thank everybody. Thank our guests. Thanks, Julie, Babs, Burnson, Brooke, and everything else.
Yehuda Basha.
All right, thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and everybody have a wonderful, wonderful Passover.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.